The Walking Dead Season 10, Episode 5, What It Always Is over, but we are just getting started here on Post Show Recaps. Hello, everybody. I'm Josh Wiggler, joined here by Jessica Leese. And Jess, we're just a bunch of nuts about to talk about Walking Dead.
I think I'm going to tap out right away.
Tap out right away. So it's a very short podcast this week. Good thing, too, because nothing happened here on week 5 of season 10 of The Walking Dead. Uneventful all the way across the board.
Shut it down. No deaths. No violence.
No violence. No deaths. No terminal illnesses being diagnosed. No celebrity worshiping killers on the loose. No need for gauze and bandages.
It was just no unlikely friendships.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It was a very, very bland episode of The Walking Dead. We kid, it was eventful. A lot happened. What It Always Is was always eventful all the way through.
Yeah. What It Always is eventful.
Yeah. What It Always is such a Walking Dead episode title. This is what I said to you literally 2 seconds before we started recording the podcast.
Yeah, I feel like it's the only thing missing is Morgan telling us.
That is such a Morgan thing to say.
It's a super Morgan
yes.
thing. In fact, I thought it was a direct shout out to Morgan.
Yeah.
Especially there's a point where Ezekiel says, I know what it is. And I'm like, yeah, you know what it is.
Yeah, that is.
You were supposed to.
Isn't that what you were supposed to? It is what it always is. Is this like an actual Morgan quote that we are circling right now? I would not be shocked if this is something that Morgan said once upon a time. This is definitely part of like his clear vernacular of when Morgan goes fully insane. What it always is totally something you would hear from Morgan.
Yeah. And it's certainly it at least riffs on you know what it is, which
right.
was a thing that he said very often. And I know that's the exact verbiage because then in my head, I would always go black and yellow, black and yellow, black and yellow, black and yellow.
Yeah. Oh, man. We were missing no Morgan this week, but plenty of murdering and killing and violence all the same here in an episode of The Walking Dead that I think had like the most going on of the
yes.
season.
I think a lot of murder death kills.
Tons of MDKs, and I'm sure that none of these people know how to use the three seashells unless we were talking about Oceanside, in which case they know what's up.
That's why Oceanside exists.
Yeah. To teach, that's why they're thriving. They've really figured out the environmentally friendly ways to eliminate all waste. But what it always is, Jess, the most Walking Dead episode of the season so far.
Yes, it is. There was the most walking and the most dead.
It was a big Negan episode. We got a lot of follow-up on what happened to Negan, even though there's still mystery surrounding Negan. We're still not entirely clear what's going on with him and how it is he is free right now. Seems like the show is keeping that pretty close to the vest.
Yeah, I don't know that I even necessarily care. I'm just happy that he is out.
Yeah, he's out. He's out and about. He's teaching the youth of America, or what's left of America, all the important things in life, simulating what it was like to be on an airplane, to eat that super gross beef stroganoff, the elegant art of the nut tapping, all sorts of things coming from Professor Negan's class
it's
this week.
A second volume of The Way of the Peaceful Warrior.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Morgan teaches you how to fight with a stick, and Negan teaches you the fine art of the nut tap.
Yeah, yeah. Avoid the stick is part of Negan's advice in that regard. There's the Negan story. There's what's going on with Ezekiel. There's this big search for Kelly, which has a lot of Daryl and Connie involved, but some ramifications for the greater Magna crew, including the cart of supplies, the Magna Carta, if you will. I've been waiting a couple days to bust that out now. Is it worth it? Probably not.
100%.
100%. Some stuff going on with the Whisperers, some confirmation about the shenanigans they've been up to, and some general hilltoppery as well. So just a lot going on here in week 5 of The Walking Dead season 10. We'll get into your feedback later on in the episode, of course. Plenty of ways you can always send that in. TWD@postshowrecaps.com is our email address. You can tweet at us at Round Howard, at Haymaker Hattie, at Postshow Recaps as well. Our feedback form open for business, postshowrecaps.com/feedback is the way to do that as well. And then we'll get into the comic book zone with the music intact. We will talk spoilers from the comics to contextualize some of this episode and start looking ahead towards episode 6 and beyond. But just kind of generally fitting this episode alongside the 4 we've already talked about, how did you feel about what it always is and where it seems to be taking us here in season 10?
Well, it definitely took us a lot of places. I like when a lot of things happen. And this is also, I don't want to get too far down the comic book zone path, especially since we haven't heard the music yet, but it hit a lot of notes that we can pull directly out of the comics that I think are starting to shape what the broader arc of the season is going to be. We got a little bit of everybody, which is always nice. I mean, not that it's not a, you know, not that it's not a good thing to just really drill down deep into what's going on with one group of people, but we got a little bit of everybody and everybody kind of got nudged forward a little bit. And I think the Negan story is particularly interesting. I think that's where we definitely have to start this week, because 100%. this was just such a weird look at who Negan is at this point in time. And I think we really learned a lot about him. And I can draw some very interesting parallels to other things in pop culture, but I thought, This was such a sly wink to the fan base that this dude Brandon comes out of nowhere and it turns out he's like the number one Negan stan.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like this whole episode was just the show telling us, hey, if you venerated this guy back when he was bashing people's skulls in with a bat, you're a jerk. Yeah. You're not a good person. That's not something to idolize. Why do you do that? You're like the same people that get the Harry Potter dark mark tattooed on yourself. It's not cool.
It's uncool. Yeah, I think in the same breath that Negan is telling Brandon, go wherever the hell you want. I don't give a shit, just as long as I don't have to see that creepy, pasty ass face of yours ever again. Feels like the show was saying that to people who like really adored Negan and like believed in Negan, and would, you know, unironically whistle the savior whistle because they were team saviors all the way through. Felt like a real condemnation of the Negan of old and those tactics. And I, you know, ironically enough, Negan himself condemning that stuff. Negan himself very clearly being remorseful, feeling icky about a lot of that behavior. It's hard to know exactly where he's landing by the end of the episode, and I think you and I can judge it a little bit more in the comic book zone. But you know, by the end of it, he is wearing the jacket. He does seem to be reunited with. Couldn't tell if that was like actual Lucille or just a new baseball bat that is playing the role of Lucille. Lucille 2, if you'd like to, if you'd like to call it Lucille 2. It's afraid of heights. It's got,
I'm going to,
it gets the spins very easily, Lucille too.
Likes the younger men.
yeah absolutely. I don't know what you would rate Lucille. I guess on a scale of 0 to 10, it rates a 2. Lucille too. But by the end of the episode, like, he's playing the hits, you know. He's bashed a few brains in, only one human brain in, over the course of the episode, which I feel like bravo for some restraint there, Negan. But by the end of it, he's, you know, he's whistling, he's little pig, let me in, he's big bad wolfing it. and seemingly courting disaster with the Whisperers. So you wonder, like, where he's at in the final moments. Is he reverting to his older ways somehow? Is that something else that's going on here? I think most of the evidence from the rest of the episode would compel you in that direction, that there is more going on here, and that the Negan that we're seeing right now is more reformed than not. Still the kind of guy that's going to tell, like, a 10-year-old kid who he's just met the finer ways of the art of the nut tap, which is sort of strange behavior, but kind of very Negan-y. But he's also going to be the guy who is very, 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 very deeply upset when this kid, Milo, and his mom are found dead. You totally buy that he authentically was going to get them to Alexandria, or at least as close as he could get them to Alexandria.
Well, he was taking them to the hilltop, actually.
Oh, is that where he was going to take them?
Yeah, I'm going to be that guy.
Yeah.
Because he describes it to them as they have agriculture, they have a big fence, and they have a mansion.
True. Totally. Absolutely. But he was going to get them to civilization. And he was going to he was going to get them to people that, like, I don't know, that, like, he had fought against before. So this was, you know, this was a Negan who was very different from the guy that Brandon was idolizing.
It's true. And he really had to grapple with the guy that Brandon was idolizing. And I think a lot of this episode is just Negan confronting Negan and realizing how much he does not like that guy and how much he regrets being that guy and how much damage he caused because he was that guy. And I think he, toward the end, has started to reconcile, like, there are pieces of his past self that he can pick up and use, but I think it's kind of coming together, like, making him a little bit whole again. But I don't think there's ever a point where he's going to go back to being, like, this power hungry, like, mobster. What is the word I'm trying to think of? Where he's shaking people down.
It's like a crime boss, you know, like,
yeah,
the
he's totally a crime boss. Yeah, it's like a crime boss. He's got his syndicate and they're shaking people down for supplies. It's like, yeah, it's a nice civilization you have there. It's a shame if anything happens to him.
Right.
That's the guy he is anymore. But he does know he is, you know, he's got strength points and dexterity points and he can be a force in this world for something. Probably not for evil the way he was, but he has a score to settle and he is going to find the Whisperers and do something with them.
I think he's, like, going, if you want to talk alignment chart, right? Like, I think that he's trying to go from lawful evil to chaotic good. I think, like, he's spent a lot of time in the neutral zone, whichever neutral box you want to put him in. And I think that he's trying to move diagonally across the board. I think he would have fancied himself civilized in his way, that he was bringing order to the world as he saw it, as he was the leader of the saviors. And now he's breaking away from the established law of the Alexandrian safe zone in order to do whatever the heck it is he's doing right now. He's out there in the wild. That's illegal. He should be in jail. But it seems like he is trying to do some good out here. He's trying to protect these people at the very least. And I think that he, like you say, I think he has to confront the fact that when he was lawful in his mind, the impact that it seemingly had on somebody who remembers him, or at least remembers the stories about him, like this kid, Brandon, who would have been, you know, 10 or so years younger than we see in this episode. So a fairly young guy, probably, you know, not terribly far away from Carl's age. It was amazing to hear, like, Carl's name evoked and Rick's name evoked. There was some ancient history that reared its head in this episode. But he has to reckon with the fact, Negan does, that he was leaving behind, like, a wake of evil. You know, the people that remember him are the people who thought that he would be impressed by butchering children. And that's not who Negan wants to be anymore.
Yeah, it's true. And you also see a lot of hints of him grappling with the person he was before all of this, because you see him tapping into his past self as a coach when he's talking, I think, both to Milo and to Brandon at separate points. You see his inner coach come out and he's thinking of ways, like, he has spoken to adolescent boys a lot over the course of his life and he knows what language they respond to and how to put them at ease. And so you see that, especially in the nut tapping scene, but also in the early points before Brandon kind of shows himself to be the icky sycophant that he is, you see Negan like, trying to guide him and trying to like, okay, we're throwing our lots in together. Maybe this is going to be okay. And then it really, really isn't. But you see him really make an effort to coach him.
Yeah. And it's not, it's really not working with Brandon, especially. And I think the moment that Brandon is talking about going after Milo and his mom when they go off for the walk, he's like, we should probably track them down, see what they've got, kill them. That's the way things used to be. Like, that's the moment where I think for Negan, he's like, yeah, this isn't going to work. You and I are not going to be simpatico on this one.
Yeah, it's not you, it's me. Well, actually, it is you.
Actually, it is fully, fully you. Yeah, I thought that this was great. I thought that the Negan stuff this episode was awesome. Jeffrey Dean Morgan, really, really great. And I think what's really intelligent about the way that the story is being told with Negan is I think that there is some acknowledgement that we can never really forgive a guy like this who has had this legacy, who has had this impact. Who has left people in his wake who feel like the world should be viewed in this blunt force trauma way, and has done the things that he has done. But that doesn't mean he's not still maybe capable of some good. It doesn't mean he's not still capable of some level of introspection and reflection on the damage that he's done. And maybe that there is more that can be done in the time that he's got now and the opportunities he has now. And on top of all of that is he's capable of pursuing all of that without losing, you know, his edge. The nut tapping scene, Jess, was really, really, really funny. I mean,
it was just very on brand for Negan.
It was very on brand for Negan. And I loved that the episode took the time to give us like a 5-minute scene of Negan with a kid, like telling him what it was like to be on an airplane, because it really helps you remember that we're a decade into the apocalypse now. Like, this kid definitely has zero memories of ever being on an airplane. If he was ever on an airplane, he was a baby. You know, he was an infant. He's got no memories of any of that. And getting that from Negan's perspective was really sweet. He's even talking about his own, his wife, how Lucille did not like the beef stroganoff. That was not something she was interested in. And then him talking about the nut tapping as just like a very, very Negan thing to talk about, and not an advisable tactic if you're trying to get back at somebody. I don't know if that is the strongest way to achieve payback or to win a fight. I certainly hope, Jess, that when Brandon returned to kill Milo and his mother, Milo didn't try to defuse the situation with a nut tap. Because if that's the case, then Negan is directly responsible for their deaths.
I mean, honestly, what I really wanted out of that scene, I wanted Brandon to show up and be like, yeah, I killed them both. And you know, that one kid, the only thing he had to defend himself was a little nut tap.
Yeah.
I really wanted the kid to like defend himself with a nut tap and have that come full circle. And I feel like it's a real missed opportunity that it didn't.
Yeah, we could get maybe a webisode series on the last stand of Milo.
The tapping dead.
Yeah, the tapping dead for sure would be highly, highly entertaining. Or if like Negan had come back and like they were dead, but Brandon was also doubled over. He's like, oh, that little idiot. Ooh, yeah. He got me.
Or, you know, Negan stuns him with a rock and then taps his nuts before he kills him.
Right. Yeah, that could have worked, too. That could have worked, too. Brandon, worst character or the most awful character we've encountered this season?
I'll just say not enough happened to that guy's nuts this episode.
Yeah. He's definitely very, very dead. And that's probably for the best. But could it have been worse for him before he went out?
It really... He's one of those characters you really wish, like, maybe Negan could have just left him senseless as some walkers were bearing down on him. Because that would have been a better death for him. Get torn apart by walkers. I like that.
Yeah, I think of, like, poor Noah in the Turnstile.
Yeah.
You know, like, that man did not deserve the brutality that he received. That's the kind of thing that should be reserved for someone as awful as Brandon.
Right. Like Brandon needs like the Dale death.
Yeah. Oh, God. Hands into the guts. Yeah. Sorry, brother. But are we being harsh? Is there a charitable view of Brandon who grew up as the son of a former savior? It seems like his family is either not around anymore or they're full on Alexandria converts and he's been reared on all of these glory days and nobody gets him and he's just this misunderstood guy. I'm talking myself out of it as I say it.
Well, I think it is okay to both note that he is a product of his environment and also simultaneously say he is the worst.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Because it didn't happen to everybody who came through this. And I really appreciate, and this is something that I don't think the comics ever did enough of, is grappling with the legacy of what it meant to have saviors in this universe and to have had that war and that all that death and all that loss. And I think the show often doesn't deal with it well enough. And the fact that we are now kind of looking back on, well, what would that actually do to somebody? And this is like going back to the Lizzie and Mika days. Like, you are a child that is growing up in this world. How is that going to mess you up? And how are you going to react? And what situations, like who will be your hero? And what actions do you think you need to take? And what does that do to your sense of good and evil? How does it warp it? And I just love that we're exploring those themes and we're thinking about it and we're forcing Negan again to confront it and to realize how much he's contributed to this toxic, awful world where morals have been flipped upside down.
I'm sad that Milo is dead because I felt like Milo had potential to be in the upper echelon of best kids in The Walking Dead. Seemed like a good kid.
He had a little bit of Will from Stranger Things upside
down. Yeah, upside down.
Yes, a little upside down. Yeah, he seemed like an okay kid, and I would have been fine with putting the two of them at the hilltop and just having them be background characters like Scott. And like every so often you just like walk by, they're like in the background picking tomatoes or like taking a guard shift. That'd be okay. That would have been the happy ending that they deserved.
Yeah, but this is a better direction for the story, I think. And I think for Negan to have to lose two people who he had just met but wanted to do right by, I think that fuels the character better for whatever's coming next. And whatever's coming next, Jess, it's going to involve the Whisperers. That's where we leave him at the end of this episode. He puts on his big bad wolf pants and starts huffing and puffing and blowing the houses down and taking Lucille too to a bunch of walkers. And then suddenly he's at the mercy of the Whisperers. And the final line we're left with is him and Beta. He says, "All right, you big ass freak, let's do this." And I don't know, I'm pretty hyped for whatever this is. I think it's going to be pretty good.
It could be anything and it's all going to be good.
Yeah, it was a great ending to the episode.
It really was. It makes me want to watch another one right away.
Yeah.
It makes me sad I'm not binge watching it. And you know, I go up and down on Walking Dead. Sometimes I love it. Sometimes it's a slog. But it's been a really long time since I have gotten to the end of an episode. And I'm like, okay, where's the next one? Need it right now.
Yeah. No, I think like we're on a little bit of a roll right now. Like, I think like, you know, and any Walking Dead is going to have highs and lows, like any episode of the show, I think. And I just think that we've been on more highs than lows right now. I kind of feel that energy of like, yeah, I would bop to the next episode right now if I could. Like, if it was available for me, I would just pop that right on. I'd be pretty happy about it.
Yeah, I would totally like go online and pirate this episode and like get spoiled. I would like if it was the comic, I would read a PDF of somebody like putting it on a scanner, taking pictures of it with their phone.
Right.
I would watch the shaky cam person holding their phone up to the TV. That's how much I want to know what happens next.
We do not endorse piracy on this podcast unless it is Pirate Michonne with maybe an outside allowance for Pirate Carol. Room for improvement.
Yeah. Yeah. But Pirate Carol would have to improve a lot.
Absolutely. All right. Well, let's move away from Negan. What do you want to talk about next? Should we talk about everything that's going on with like the search for Kelly? Maybe I think that there's a lot to divine from that, because it's not just the search for Kelly. That's really where we get a lot of like the Magna crew has a big to do in this episode. And we're getting some advancement on the Daryl and Connie stuff, I feel like.
Yeah, I think the ship is headed into port.
Hmm. How about that?
Yeah, it's pretty sweet. I can't be totally mad at it. It really seems like, you know, Daryl deserves to have good things happen to him.
I think so. Him and Connie, they're very cute. I think they're very cute together. I like when he was telling her the story about Merle and the boat. And how he put his arm around Merle to save him from drowning in the boat, and so he simulates it with Connie, and she seemed like she thought it was adorable. And
this was like the zombie apocalypse equivalent of like stretching and yawning and then dropping your arm down on
yeah,
somebody's shoulder.
Kind of, I think so.
Yeah, but I love that we're talking about Merle. We're talking about Carl. We're talking about Merle. It's like we spent a lot of time, especially in the Gimple era, where we didn't really talk about people that had gone before. And now it's like, oh, we have this whole history to draw from. We have things that happened to these characters that shaped them, and we're going to acknowledge it. We're going to talk about Merle. We're going to talk about, oh, yeah, remember him? He was actually a guy on the show, and he was kind of a dick, and he made Daryl the person that he is. And that is... that just makes everything feel so much richer and more real, rather than just like, oh, they're like avatars in video games. Oh, that one's dead. We'll never see him again. Actors off the show. Bye bye.
Yeah. Yeah. I think because there's such a deep well to draw from, like that story that he tells about how they were on a boat. It was a stolen boat. I just love like what he's able to get across through language, like through like the spoken word versus what he's able to sign, because he's starting to figure that out, and versus what he has to write out. It's like, yeah, it's a stolen boat, private property, like everything that he has to pantomime. And like you could visualize it. Like you can imagine that story about the frickin' Dixon brothers on this stolen boat in this place where they're not supposed to be, chugging beers, nearly drowning, and Daryl saving Merle's life, and frickin' Merle being so annoyed that Daryl forgot the beer. Like that was, it's just so vividly drawn that you can see it, and you can see it because we know Michael Rooker as Merle Dixon. We remember that. Like that was stuff that we got to encounter and experience. And like, say what you will about this being a show that's been on forever. You know, it's been on for a very long time. But because it's got a decade or so of history, these are the things that we can now be telling. And like, it's something we've already talked about this season on the podcast, Jess. Like, it had been brought up a few weeks ago, right? Like, that there was this feeling of history within The Walking Dead that can be pulled to the surface. That's really fun. And in a way that other shows can do. Like, there's other shows where legacy matters a lot. There's other shows where family histories matter a lot. Certainly that was all over Game of Thrones, right? Like, if there was like something deep in Targaryen lore that was worth bringing up for Daenerys. But even then, like, that's theoretical, that's abstract. Here we're talking about characters that are dead that we know, or characters that have been medevaced by helicopter that are presumed dead that we know. And it really does make it feel a lot more poignant. Like, it makes it feel a lot more poignant that we know, to take it back to Negan and Brandon, like the Negan that Brandon is describing is a Negan that we saw, and a Negan that we did not like very much, and a Negan that stands in sharp contrast to the Negan we're seeing today. And to hear even Daryl reflect on his brother, to reflect on Merle in kind of this funny, whimsical way, when we know how deep and painful their relationship was at times. It's really, really nice. I really like the way that that's drawn upon here.
Yeah. And to break the fourth wall down yet again, I think these are two sides of the same coin here. Just as I feel like Brandon is sort of like a condemnation of a certain type of fan. And we're saying, like, the guy that thinks that is cool, that's not okay, don't be that fan. We're also rewarding a certain type of fan. We're rewarding the kind of person that's stuck with the whole show and that knows Merle and can picture Merle and can draw on that history and be right there along with Daryl. And it's saying, yeah, we see you. We know you've been here the whole time. thanks for doing that. Let's, you know, remember that guy. And that's kind of fun as well. I think it's saying, like, you know, we don't hate all the fans. We just hate the ones that are like that guy that we just bashed in with a rock.
Right. The rest of us, we're family, Jess.
Yeah. F you, F you, F you. You're cool. F you.
Connie tells Daryl, we're family.
Family.
Oh, my gosh.
But that's not the vibe we're going for, is it, Josh?
I don't know. It depends on what kind of family we're talking about.
I guess, but I feel like, is she saying you're like a brother to me?
I don't know if she's saying you're like a brother to me or saying like we're all part of this community and we're all found family with one another.
Yeah, or if we're all collectively. Yeah. Or is she saying you're special to me and I want to be a family with you?
Yeah, I'd like to start a family together. We want a wedding here at the Hilltop. A Daryl Dixon and Connie Dixon team up is what I want.
Yeah, I'm shipping it. I was skeptical at first.
No, it's real. It's real. It's happening.
I'm on board. I'm on the ship.
Yeah. It's a bike. We're on the bike.
I have put my steamer trunk into steerage.
We're going full speed. The good ship, Daryl and Connie. I loved it. And I'm glad that Kelly's okay. I was very concerned for Kelly. I have questions about how Kelly is okay, considering the cold open like ends with her like tumbling down a hill in brutal condition and her back is against a rock. And we see a walker like stretching its hand out right at Kelly's face, like fingertips centimeters away from Kelly's face. And she made it out of that okay. I shouldn't question a good thing because I think Angel Theory as Kelly, I like her a lot. I'd like to see her still be on the show for a while. Sad Connie is not a Connie that I want to see. So Kelly must survive to keep Connie alive. But it was a shocker to me that she was able to make it through this one okay.
Yeah, but we've seen people in worse circumstances than that come out on top.
But there was no boulder to crawl under. There was, you know, I don't think that you were going to hide under that like a dumpster.
No, I suppose not. But I think, you know, we've seen people like on top of a car with 500 zombies surrounding the car and they get out of it.
Yeah. So what's a little bit of a.
What's like three zombies in a giant clearing?
Yeah, I guess it's true. But she makes it. She's all right. Daryl and Connie and Magna. Magna joins the crew because we come to find out that Magna and Kelly, they've been stockpiling stuff from the Hilltop just in case.
Yeah, I do want to talk about this whole Magna storyline because I feel like so much of the Magna stuff was really shoehorned into this episode. And maybe it's just because everything else was so much more compelling. Like you had the Daryl and Connie stuff. You had a big reveal we haven't even talked about yet. You had all of the Negan stuff. You had some Whisperers moments. And then you just have like, hey, these relatively new characters, let's care about them. Are you sure you don't care about them? How about now? How about we tell you more information? How about they're doing this thing? How about they did this thing in the past? Don't you care? And it's like, stop making, trying to make me care. Like, just have me care organically or, you know, don't just info dump on me and assume that I'm going to care now that I know all this information. Like, they didn't feel earned. It just felt like a lot of piling on of background info that isn't terribly relevant to the plot yet. And I felt like the stockpiling of food was just giving them something to do for the sake of giving them something to do. And in an episode where everything else was so organic and so lived in, this was just a big misstep.
Well, I have to first of all argue that I'm sure that much of what was in the cart was indeed organic. I think that there They are living very organic lifestyles here in the apocalypse. And then I think it, as far as like what it accomplishes, I think that the show is trying to, because Daryl Dixon is a new man, right? Like Daryl Dixon isn't like the full on lone wolf that he used to be. He's got Doug. He's hanging out in Alexandria. He's going to dinner parties. He's trying to be a leader here. He's got family to take care of. But I feel like Magna is maybe being like fitted into like what that old Daryl vibe was of like, hard to get along with others, better off in smaller groups, even like what Daryl was like, you know, I think it was as early on as the first episode of the season 9 premiere, I think Daryl says to Rick something like, when we were a smaller, tighter group, that was right. This isn't right. Like you get the sense that Magna feels that way. And I get the instinct to tell that story because that's a cool character if you can do that right. But I think like, I don't know, if I were to power rank the four, I guess five, if you count Luke would be bottom of the list for me. But like if you're ranking the rest of the Magna crew, I think Magna's just the one that is that feels like you're retreading some old territory. Like she does kind of feel like she's just sort of like that Daryl Dixon outsider right now. And they're just trying to kind of find ways for her to feel conflict with some of these other people. And it doesn't feel quite as natural as everybody else. And I think that a big difference there is we see like this, like kind of like this falling apart between her and Yumiko, who we know was her attorney back when Magna, you know, pre-apocalypse, apparently she killed her uncle who like murdered her cousin or something like that. And Yumiko always thought that Magna was innocent and Magna now confesses, no, she killed him. And that's a huge source of conflict. Yumiko rightly feels very betrayed by that, feels like her world's been turned upside down. But that doesn't have a lot of power for us, I think, just because we didn't see any of that. And we're talking about like the stuff with Negan and we're talking about the stuff with Daryl. These are things that like we can identify a little more easily. And not to say that like you can't tell a compelling story about new characters who have histories that we haven't seen before. I just think that that stuff's going to maybe be a little less dynamic and compelling and interesting if there's compelling and interesting storytelling going on with these more realized characters who we know a lot better.
Yeah, that's true. And I think it goes back to showing, not telling. Like the first appearance of Magna and her group was done so incredibly well. And I think we highlighted it at the time that they just kind of come in out of nowhere and they're our entry point into this new world that we haven't been at for a few years. And right away, when you see them, you know who these people are. You know what they're about. You know their relationships to one another. And you want to know more. And here, it's like they're just telling us. And I don't feel that pull to know more. It's like, okay. I guess you killed a guy and I guess you guys are having tension because of it. Cool. I hope you work it out. But it felt like some season 8 crap again, where they're like, well, this person doesn't have anything to do. Let's give them a crisis of conscience. Let's put them on the kill team. Let's put these people on the no kill team. And you know, I expect more out of the show now. It's a different and better show now where we don't have room to just info dump on people.
But I really like Yumiko, I gotta say.
And she's great.
I mean,
yeah.
She's super awesome. And again, some questions. How is Yumiko, how does she have seniority over Alden and Earl? Like, it seems like people are taking their marching orders from Yumiko at the Hilltop right now. And she's fairly new to the community. I guess it's probably been like a year-ish since they all showed up. I think it's probably somewhere in the neighborhood of like anywhere from like 8 months to 12 months, I would guess.
Yeah, but how long did Maggie Green have at the Hilltop? It was way less than that.
I guess that's true. But if Ezekiel's like not really like being super in charge of the place right now, you would think that like Jerry is his vice president. I just feel like we're missing something as to how Yumiko got elected such a powerful position. Not that I'm complaining. I think she's a great fit for the job. I just want to know what happened. Did they find out she's like an attorney, that she's a badass? They're like, yeah, you know what, Yumiko, you're really cool. And we all like you a lot. And we kind of feel like you should be in charge. Maybe it's as simple as that. I don't know.
I don't even think she was appointed so much as she saw something that needed to be done. She's doing some like Tara stuff. Like all of this stuff needs to get taken care of. And if I don't do it, it's not going to get done. So she just like stepped up in that way. And, you know, all you have to do to get people respecting your authority is to just look like you know what you're doing.
Yeah, she definitely does. She definitely does. And I'm team Yumiko as far as the Yumiko Magna thing. I think I would love to hear an argument from somebody who's team Magna over team Yumiko. You have to convince the hell out of me because
you can't do it without a flashback. Like we needed an episode of like their pre-zombie apocalypse lives. And we kind of go down that lost flashback rabbit hole. We got that. If we got that and she felt more fully realized, I think we could sympathize with her a little bit more. But right now she's just being a jerk.
What do you think? I feel like there's a good chance that that could happen. I think what you just sketched out feels like a very plausible, like future cold open.
We don't get a lot of that anymore. I think it would be very jarring. I think it would have to be done very carefully to do that. But hey, speaking of pre-zombie apocalypse lives, I have a tiny detail on this scene in particular that I want to see if you caught and I want to see if you think I'm right about this.
Okay, cool. Lay it on me.
So we get the point where Magna is sitting there like not doing anything. Yumiko's been out like being the leader. Yumiko comes in and Magna is sitting there listening to music. And it's this like mournful country ballad being played on this old wind up Victrola. And it's these very like weird lyrics about laundry and liquor. And I was like, what is this song? And I tried to Google some of the lyrics. They're not coming up. This is like some Easy Street moments. Here's my theory. Maybe I shouldn't get into this yet.
Yeah, but I think
but
the thing
you know
that
where I'm going.
Yeah,
with this.
I think you're circling a certain drain that we can dive down in the comic book zone that I think other people are probably following along with too. I like where your head's at.
You picking up what I'm putting
down. I'm picking up
here.
What you're putting down. Let's put a pin in that and talk about that in the CBZ. We will definitely get into that because that's a great, great call. Let's think of the hilltop though. And talk about more family history as we're getting the really terrible news that Ezekiel, at the very least, believes that he has thyroid cancer, that this is something that is in his family, that his father had it. I think he said his grandmother had it as well. It's something that has like a 98% survival rate, I think he said, at least in our day and age, right? In our times of quote unquote sorcery and witchcraft. But feels like the survival odds given the medical advances of the zombie apocalypse where Sadiq is suggesting acupuncture and hypnosis as potential cures. Ezekiel maybe not feeling quite so optimistic. This was a turn that I really was not expecting, that we were gonna start embarking on a story of Ezekiel wrestling with a terminal illness, and I'm very upset about it. I'm not happy about this at all. This is really upsetting.
Things do not look good for Ezekiel. I feel like he's really, it explains a lot about what he was doing last week, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, he's just like very depressed. Like I think he's feeling like the end is near for him at this point anyway. And like, I think he's getting like reflective on his life, and what he's left behind and what he's done, but hasn't done, who he's protected, but who he hasn't protected. And I think he's like looking at it all through the framework of knowing that his days are numbered. And Angela Kang did an interview with Dalton Ross once again over at EW. And she talked about like, hey, look, Breaking Bad was a show about a man with cancer, and he made it quite a while. You know, they made a big show out of that. So it doesn't mean that just because this is something that's happening with Ezekiel means that he's like earmarked for an imminent demise. Like he may be here for a while yet, but I think it's interesting that we're at the very least going to be embarking on a story about dealing with an illness like this in the apocalypse. To my mind, Jess, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm really struggling to think of the show going in this territory other than like the governor's father-in-law or whatever you want to call him.
Oh yeah.
Who like had like the breathing issues.
They're like, we can't leave until this guy dies.
Right. But like beyond that, like I can't really think of a story. I mean, I was going to say, I can't think of a story where people got sick in The Walking Dead, how quickly I erased the swine flu from my memory. But I don't think that fully counts. This does feel different.
Yeah, it does. It's like a, It's a much longer and more drawn out version of, you do get a lot of scenes where somebody gets bitten and they're more or less fine, but then they have some time before the zombie virus kicks in where they can reflect and like save people and have a moment and think about their legacy. I think we've seen that beat a few different times. And so this is just like a really extended zombie bite.
Yeah, but I think what's great about it is how it touches to our world. And like, you know, a show like The Walking Dead and a zombie apocalypse like that as a horror genre, subgenre, I think it's exciting because like you try to like map yourself into that world and like what would you do in these circumstances? And like, how would you handle it if you got bit or whatever? But this feels like very real. Like this feels like something that would just happen. This doesn't feel like something that would just happen in your life today. Like this is something that would happen in your life. You know, members of your family get sick, you get sick. This is life. And to kind of stop down and explore that through a character who we know and have grown to love, or at least many of us, I believe, have grown to love Ezekiel, to see him going through something that is so profoundly human, and real, I think is an interesting challenge that the show is setting up, that I'm compelled to see where it goes. And my fingers are very, very firmly crossed for the king. He's been through so much already.
Yeah, he is someone that we really care about. And this is really devastating news in a way that it probably wouldn't be for a different character. And I also like that this does a thing that I think I've said several times. I like that Fear the Walking Dead does this very well, where they really think about what it is like to live in this world, and they find scenarios that maybe the flagship doesn't think about so often, where like, what if you did this? What does it look like to be on a boat? Like, what does it look like to cross an international border? What does it look like? How do you relate to people?
Right.
That come from different backgrounds, like what is the beer like in this world? And they just like take a tiny detail and kind of spin it out. And I think this is Walking Dead starting to do a little bit of that Fear the Walking Dead meditations on, well, what about this thing from our world? Let's put it in this world and see how you have to respond to it differently. And I'm kind of here for that level of world building. And I think they picked the right character to build that world around.
Yeah, it sucks because it's such a game of attrition on The Walking Dead right now, where like we've lost so many main characters. And I guess that's always been the name of the game here. But we know that Danai Gurira is going to leave. We know Michonne is on her way out in some capacity. So like you're scrambling, like you're frantically looking like to cling on to people who are very recognizable and known to us at this point to stick around. And like if the show is telling us like, don't get used to Ezekiel being here for much longer, I don't know. That's very depressing. I don't want that to be the case, but that is life. And that's The Walking Dead. So I think, you know, who knows exactly where it's going. But I thought that it was an unexpected turn for me. I did not see this coming at all.
Yeah. And it really does put an extra note of heaviness onto that scene with Ezekiel and Michonne from last week. If you look back on that scene now, you have to think, there's going to come a point in time, probably in the not too distant future, where neither one of them is on the show anymore.
Yeah.
And now that makes that scene more powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. One more scene to talk about before we start getting into feedback in the comic book zone. It's just everything that's going on with the Whisperers. I feel like it's important to talk through. Like, we're getting it from the Hilltop's perspective, like Alden and Earl, who are still like, those frickin' Whisperers. We got to come after those Whisperers. And they're conspiring. They want to turn that tree into some catapults and trebuchets. They really want to come after the Whisperers. And we've had some questions about like how much of this is on the Whisperers, how much of this is just the natural world of The Walking Dead. Certainly Alpha has said like, that wasn't us. It wasn't us. This one's not on us. Well, it turns out that like some of this is on the Whisperers, because we get the perspective from Alpha and her strategy is death by a thousand cuts, right? Like they're trying to like push in the borders. They weakened the tree. I guess they're damming up the creek right now. They're trying to crush civilization so that the smart ones decide that they just want to join the Whisperers. This is their move.
this is great. I feel like it answered so many questions. Like, I have not seen a single scene answer so many questions about anything on this show pretty much ever. And a lot of times it just raises more questions, but this is great. This just like encapsulates everything Whisperers are about. We find out, okay, why are they bothering and what were they actually responsible for and what is their next move? These are all things that I think under a lesser showrunner, we would have dragged this out and like just added more and more confusion onto it until it was just like a Gordian knot. And here it's like, this is very clear. I understand these people in a way that I know I didn't in the comics for sure.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, you have a motive. You have an end game and you have a pretty good strategy. I can't be mad at this. This is a, you know, you're terrible people and you're obviously mentally ill and I don't want to wear a skinhead, but yeah. I get why you want me to.
Yeah. And speaking of their strategy, they're looking to send in a mole patrol, except we're in on it. It seems like Alpha wants to send Gamma in to infiltrate the Alexandrians. Like, that was definitely your takeaway, right? When she says, like, it's time for you to wear a different mask, because Aaron, whose last name we still don't know, but we now know him as Aaron from Vermont, if he were to call in and leave a voicemail, that's how he
would. But she definitely will.
Yes. Aaron from Vermont, that he threw gauze at Gamma, and Gamma took the gauze and reported the gauze back to Alpha, and Alpha's like, oh, you guys are gauze pals. Maybe we can work this angle. Maybe you can take advantage of this friendship with Aaron. So wondering where that's going, especially because like I'm really struggling with where Gamma is at with all of this, Jess. Like, you, when she like kills the Guardian to you know, use the Guardian to clog up the dam, or the creek rather, she like really murder death kills it and slices her hand open in the process. But she's having like these flashes of Alpha killing the guy who she's now just killed as a walker. She's having flashes of being anointed Gamma. She's having flashes of letting her own sister die in order to save Alpha. And is it like buyer's remorse? What's going on? Like, it seems like she's like already like kind of quickly turning on all of like, it's like she got the promotion, Jess, and like now she wishes that she had left the company.
Yeah, it's really confusing to watch this. I'm not sure where Gamma's head is at this moment, because I think you could make a case either way. I think maybe we are meant to believe that she is starting to question this philosophy that you just kill everybody that doesn't agree with you. And that's an interesting parallel with what we were talking about earlier with Negan, where she has a lot of past to grapple with. And this is going to be very interesting when she, if she is going to go infiltrate or at least like kind of have a illicit friendship with Aaron, who we know really likes the illicit cross community friendships. He's already kind of susceptible to that. He's a really good person to target, if not necessarily. I think Alpha might have suggested, like, maybe you should go hit on him a little bit. And I'm like, that's not going to work.
Yeah, good luck.
Good luck. Yeah. But I think to get a little taste of what Aaron's life is like and what Alexandria is like, I think that could push Gamma a little bit in the other direction. I think that could push her over to our side a little bit more.
All right, let's get into some feedback and then we'll get into the comic book zone and then we'll wrap up here. Some feedback talking about season 10, episode 5. Let's begin with a thumbs up review from Thomas Altman, who wrote in and said, another solid episode for this season. I liked Negan's past being thrown in his face like a poorly whistled cover song that he's supposed to recognize by a poser fan. Well, that's a great way of describing it.
I love that.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. Really, really wonderful. Zaddy Taren wrote in and said, super fanboy Brandon probably used to cosplay as Negan at Oceanside Con. Man, I hope that was a thing.
I feel like maybe after the fair, they were like, let's pivot in a different direction.
Yeah, I think so too. Maybe they know that like these big mass celebrations probably need to stop for the time being. Jess, I know that this was already on your radar because you responded to the tweet, but Zaddy Taran also tweeted at us to say, did you guys Google nut tapping like me? Jess, I believe your answer was you did not have to.
My answer, I didn't say one way or the other, but I want to know what's more shameful, having to Google it or immediately knowing what he's talking about.
So I'm the one who is assuming that this was already knowledge that you possessed.
I mean, you have a brother. I assume you know what it is.
I know what it is. I don't think that I could say with a straight face that I am innocent of the crime of the nut tap throughout my life. I don't know that I could necessarily immediately conjure up the instance where it occurred, but I had an older brother and I went to summer camp and things happen. What are you going to do? Jamie Girl posits this, Jess. She writes it and says, what's your theory on who released Negan? I'm thinking Daryl is Jamie Girl's theory. This is not something that we've really talked about much in this podcast so far, and I don't know if this is something that you'd rather save for the comic book zone. At least elements of it, I think, that we ought to talk about there. But we still have no indication of how or why Negan is free right now.
No, we don't. But I think there's a prevailing theory out there. I feel like everywhere that I've looked for people discussing this, everybody seems to think it's Carol that released him.
I like the theory. We talked about this as a possibility last week, too.
Yeah, we did. And it's weird. We've never seen the two of them interact in any meaningful way. So that's probably a scene that we're going to get at some point. We'll probably flash back on that.
I'm trying to think of like what's a better explanation right now.
Who has a better motive?
Yeah, like Carol sending Negan out, like, go take on the Whisperers and I'll vouch for you when you come back. You know, something
Carol
like
is
that.
Kind of the only person that seems to really care about the heads on the spikes.
Yeah. Or at least cares enough to like go after instant retaliation.
Yeah. She really seems the only person that's still upset about this, which is weird.
I think the fact that we didn't see her at all in this episode helps that case. I think with Daryl, Jamie Girl's theory, I just struggle to see it. I think that we would have seen another side of it. He voted in favor of letting Negan live. I don't know why we wouldn't have seen that from Daryl specifically in last week's episode if it was Daryl who had chosen to send Negan out.
Yeah, we spent so much time with Daryl these last couple of episodes, they'd really have to write around it if they're not going to mention that he was the one that did that.
Yeah, I think so too.
Oh, we got some late breaking feedback.
Ooh, yeah.
Came in like as we started recording this. Loyal listener Just Joe had some notes about the Negan story.
What did Just Joe write?
Just Joe writes, the Negan story in this episode was one of the best examples of the difference in storytelling between Scott Gimple and Angela Kang. Kang seems to better understand how to take the moments from the comic and adapt them to fit the characters of the show, as opposed to Gimple, who always seemed to just steer the show story into the comic story at the last second. And I mean, not to give away any comic book spoilers, but I think I'm definitely on board with this. I definitely agree with Joe here.
No, I'm pretty happy to use that to launch us into the comic book zone, because there's stuff from the comic books that I want to talk about in the context of that. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to march into the comic book zone at this point. If you don't mind comic book spoilers informing our discussion of The Walking Dead, then keep listening. If that sketches you out, if that is not something you want to hear and you need to nut tap out of the podcast, you may certainly do so. Now we will be back next week talking about season 10, episode 6, and you can get your feedback into us, twd@postshowrecaps.com, or through our feedback form, postshowrecaps.com/feedback, or tweeting at us on Twitter @postshowrecaps, @RoundHoward, @HaymakerHattie. With all of that said, let's take it to the comic book zone.
Comic book zone. Tune out now as spoilers aren't what you want to know. Avoid hearing plot points about Rick or Michonne. Now's the last chance to turn off during the intro. Comic book zone.
All right. Jess, I think that comment from Just Joe is fantastic, because one of the things that this episode did so well was it has to tell, I guess it doesn't have to, but if it's going to adapt the comic and if it's going to adapt what we're getting from Negan in the comics, then in the comics, Negan hits the road. He's joined by a guy named Brandon. Brandon is this kid who thinks that Negan's going to help him get revenge against the Whisperers. And Negan decides that this little shit is slowing him down. So he just kills him. And there isn't a lot of dimensionality to that choice other than, you know, like, you're annoying. I'm like, going to kill you now.
It's very much, I think the Negan of the comics is far less redeemed. And I think Negan of the comics is very much, I think Robert Kirkman kind of thinks Negan is a cool guy, even when he's bashing random people's brains in. I think there's always that undercurrent of, wow, wouldn't you love to be this guy? And the show is taking a much more nuanced tactic with that, because I think this same story in the comics is just like, somebody pisses you off, you should just dispatch them. And that happens. Negan does it over and over and over. And then it's like the evolution from like broken down prisoner Negan to badass wielding the bat, wearing the leather jacket, spouting one-liners and swearing creatively Negan, like that just turns on a dime. It's like, he was always that guy. Look, he's cool again. And the show is like, no, he's going to struggle with that. And he might be a little bit of a badass again. And he's sure he's got Lucille back, but he has a lot to answer for and a lot to contend with. And he has nothing to answer for in the comics. Like, they're just like, oh yeah, I guess that guy's back, but he's got a cool weapon, so you like him, right?
Yeah. Go live in a farmhouse on your own, happily ever after. And not that the show can't necessarily get to some version of that when this, you know, the whole thing ends 20 years from now. But I feel like there's just a lot more thought behind it. Like, I like that we get this episode that's basically devoted to like accepting or understanding why Negan would kill his traveling companion, right? Like, yeah. Why would he kill his road buddy? Would it be, you know, the Negan that they've been building on the show for the last, you know, couple of years now, last like year and a half or so almost, is not somebody who would just like randomly stab this guy because he's annoying. That's a Negan of 10 years earlier. That's not Negan today. But Negan would kill this guy who's just killed a kid, who just killed an innocent woman for no real reason, who's been, you know, besmirching everything that Negan believed he ever stood for, and, you know, not necessarily contesting that so much as like being angry at what you've just awakened me to. Right. Like, you've just awakened me to the fact that the way that I ran my ship wasn't very nice. It wasn't very good. I created people like you as a result. And I think that there's just so much more depth to that than the comic book's version of him just stabbing frickin' Brandon. It's also a lot more thematically satisfying that he bashes this guy's brains in. That's sort of Negan's fatality move if this was Mortal Kombat. Also, is Negan not a Mortal Kombat playable character yet? That's a surprise to me, if so. But this is like his thing. And I like that the episode, I think he bashed several different brains in this episode. The first was like when the walker comes at him in the woods and he has to like force it off. And it's a really, really, really gross kill. Like, he has to like branch off the head, and then he like smashes it, and like we get like full detail of the smashing.
Yep. Skull fragments, et cetera.
And then there's the door that he's just like kingpinning the walker on. And then these are all things that like he has to do to survive. This isn't something he has to do. This is closer to the old Negan, but he takes no joy in it. So I thought that was really interesting to get him in that mode of like sort of like earning his first human head smashing in a very, very long time.
Yeah, it's almost like if he's going to kill somebody from now on, it has to really, he has to have a good reason for it. He's not just going to eeny, meeny, miny, mow his way into killing people. But that being said, is there a chance that we're going to get that scene where he breaks Lucille over Beta and nothing happens?
Yeah, I think, but would it have, is it going to have as much emotional weight? Like, that happens in the comic during the Whisperer War. Negan fights Beta. He breaks the bat and he's very, very, very upset about it because he has like deep emotional attachment to the bat because the bat represents his dead wife. Lucille Prime, as it were. And I don't know that he has that same emotional attachment. I don't know. Did you read that on him when he sees the bat? Like, how did you read him seeing the bat and the jacket in this episode?
It was conflicting because I think he was already starting to realize that that guy is not a very good guy to be. And when he puts it on, it's almost like he's wearing a costume. And so you see him walking through the woods, like spouting Neganisms. I don't know if he's fully bought into it yet at this point.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that, like, he's being very demonstrative at the end of the episode because it's, you know, Ollie Ollie Oxen Free, right? Like, he's trying to get everybody out of the woods and come for him because he's absolutely been sent here on a secret mission to go and infiltrate the Whisperers and bring back Alpha's head, which, by golly, please.
Yeah, I don't even know how much he's been sent there. Or how much, I don't know what his goal is yet either. And I want them to explain that. Because if somebody did let him out for a reason to go and like infiltrate and like give him a top secret spy mission, we got to get that fairly soon. Or we're just going to have to hand wave it away.
So next week, based on the preview, looks like it's going to be a Daryl and Carol storyline, as well as more of Negan with the Whisperers. So if this theory is true, and this is one of those wonderful moments where we don't know, you know, Carol's way dead in the comics. And even if she were alive, is a very different person in the comics than the Carol of the show. And in the comic books, when Negan escapes, he's really the guy who like takes it upon himself to like, I'm going to kill the leader of the Whisperers, bring back their head and use it as a trophy of good faith with Rick. Like those are not things that are going to be able to play out one for one from the show to the comic book. So we're kind of in the dark and we're just doing some guesswork here. But if Carol did send him, if that theory holds true, and I think that there's some reason, at least for now, to believe that that could be the case. Next week, I think, is going to be a real test of if they don't tell us that, but if they don't tell us like definitive information that refutes it, I'm going to be pretty frustrated. You know what I mean? Like they have to like give us, I think they either have to outright tell us that Carol sent Negan to go and kill the Whisperers, to go and infiltrate the Whisperers. And we have to have that confirmed, or we have to have enough like confirmed in Carol's attitude and actions to kind of rule that out. If we're going to get a big Carol spotlight episode, especially like in juxtaposition to a big Negan storyline continuing, and we don't get confirmation, or we just get like tip-top-toeing around the issue, I think that that's going to be like, that's like old Walking Dead. You know, that's not the stuff. That's not the reason the show is good anymore. Like the show is good right now because it's not doing that kind of stuff. And we'd be very annoyed if that's the kind of stuff that it's doing next week.
Yeah, but speaking of old-timey Walking Dead, one thing that does, one of the big question marks on this Carol theory is if Carol had a score to settle, we've seen Carol take out an entire community basically entirely on her own in the past. So why wouldn't she just go do that herself?
I think maybe because she's a known quantity. And for her to be able to get the drop on the Whisperers is probably not a sure thing. And one of the things you could say about Carol is that she knows she's very strategic with how to like dismantle a dangerous target. Like, I think she knows the right weapons to choose in those circumstances. So, you know, you bring a sniper rifle to a cannibal fight. But you bring a Negan to a Whisperer war.
Okay, it's true. She just chose her weapon very carefully. I like it.
I don't know. We'll see. I'm open to it. I'm certainly open to it because you know, anything that kind of like gets Carol and Negan in an interesting storyline together, I'm looking forward to that. If that's where we're going to go, we just don't know yet. The Beta stuff. So Beta, you think Beta, we're hearing Beta's country music with Magna in that scene at the hilltop.
Yeah, I don't know. That didn't feel very commercial. Like, I don't think you sell out a stadium on a song like that. That felt very alt country.
Interesting.
Like, I don't know that you unmask Beta and find Ryan Adams under there and you're like, wow, right. I don't think you care who he is 10 years after the zombie apocalypse. Like, that's got to be Garth Brooks in there.
Right, right. I hadn't caught that at all, but I think that's great. I think like they're clearly like trying to layer the Beta reveal.
Yeah, they're building that universe because they had the album cover and Fear and they had like the photo and they have the, they're building to it. And that's going to be, I think that was another piece of the puzzle.
That's fun.
And I'll be, I haven't found anything about what that song was.
Yeah. That's a tell. That's good.
Yeah. Well, somebody's going to at me and be like, I can't believe you don't know that song. That song's by this indie band. But I couldn't find anything from Googling the lyrics. Maybe I just wasn't Googling the right lyrics.
You idiots. That was Jordy. I mean, Gordy. I don't know. All right. How about this question from Drew, who wrote in for the Comic Book Zone and said, now that we know that Ezekiel has cancer and things don't seem very hopeful for him, do you think we're heading to a place where Ezekiel is going to sacrifice himself to save the group during the Whisperer War, a la Andrea from the comics? We've talked about that maybe going to Michonne for the show, but Ezekiel is already alive past his expiration point from the comics. We also know that he, at the very least, believes that he has a terminal diagnosis. Do you think that this could be a use for Ezekiel, that they could give him the Andrea death that comes at the climax of the Whisperer War in the comics?
I think they're definitely giving him something heroic to do. He might go out at the mid-season point. I think that is a possibility. I think either he or Michonne is going to go out in a blaze of heroic self-sacrificial glory. I can't imagine that they both can do it and will get away with having that happen.
Yeah, I think it's got to be one or the other. I don't know. Do we want to like take a line in the sand? Who do you think is likelier? I'll take whoever you don't take of a self-sacrifice, Michonne or Ezekiel.
I think Michonne is the one that gets the self-sacrifice, and I think Ezekiel might get the plot point death.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I don't think that they would kill off Michonne without her having some say in the matter. You know what I mean?
Right. But Ezekiel, he's a major character, but he's not so major that we couldn't use his death as a catalyst.
Yeah. He's going to have to die so that Maggie can return to the hilltop and bring it back to its former glory.
Yep, exactly.
He's going to be the new president. Anything else from a comic book perspective from this episode?
I think we covered, it's funny, we were able to kind of talk around a lot of that Negan stuff, a lot of that Brandon stuff, before we even got into the comic book zone. I think we explored a lot of the comic themes I wouldn't have talked about, which I think is kind of a fun thing to do. And I keep wanting to bring up, oh, this thing that was in the comic. Oh, we're not in the comic book zone. I can't do that.
No, but you know what? I think that this episode, which I really, really enjoyed, but mostly, primarily, I enjoyed it for, okay, so I really liked the Daryl and Connie stuff. But what I really, really enjoyed it for was the Negan storyline. And I do think that, as Just Joe noted, that this was a great example of how the comics can be modified in the adaptation process for the show. And I think, to my mind, Jess, this was one of my favorite adaptations of the comics ever. Was the way they told the Negan Kills Brandon story. It was just so much richer, and it was funny, it was disturbing, it was emotional. It was great. It was really, really good.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it's a lot of watching the show is just to see like iconic bits of the comics put up onto the screen. And this was kind of the other way around. This was like, we're taking this piece from the comics, but now we're going to make it so much better than it was. We're going to build around it. And you're not just going to see like this one piece of art and this one plot point. We're going to give you the entire backstory to it. And they did it really elegantly in a way that made me actually care about Negan more than I ever would have in the comics.
Yeah, completely agreed. All right. So next week's episode of The Walking Dead, season 10, episode 6, Bonds. B-O-N-D-S, Bonds. So the
is it about baseball and steroids?
Maybe. Could be.
It's going to have an asterisk on it.
I don't know if it's like getting people out of prison. You have to, the bail's bondsman.
Are they going to talk about like, do they like Roger Moore or Sean Connery better?
That could be it. I don't know if Daniel Craig was in operation at the time that the apocalypse began. I think Casino Royale was already a thing.
What if Beta is secretly Daniel Craig?
Yo, nah, a little tall.
I mean, there was a stormtrooper that was Daniel Craig.
A little tall for Daniel Craig, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe it's George Lazenby.
Yeah, could be. I'd like to see if Sean Connery make a Walking Dead cameo. That'd be fun.
They couldn't even get him for Skyfall. I don't think it's going to happen.
I don't think it's going to happen either. We'll find out which Bond reigns supreme in next week's The Walking Dead. Jess, I'm very reluctant to say this officially on a podcast, but I'm going to do it anyway because I've already said that piece of it. So I do another podcast around these parts over on Rob Has a Podcast. It is called The Wiggle Room, where on The Wiggle Room, I speak with Rob Cesternino about Survivor. And by speak, I mean mostly laugh at ridiculous song parodies in a song parody competition called The Wand Off, which is why Jess and I have talked about potentially doing an Officer Donned Off here on The Walking Dead. I am not announcing an Officer Donned Off, nor am I really announcing anything so much as...
You've got my hopes up,
Josh. So much as I am relaying information from this week's Wiggle Room, where I told your friend and mine, Rob C., former host of The Walking Dead coverage here on Post Show Recaps, that his presence is missed. There have been some Henry shenanigans on the show this season. People have asked for his participation. And I told him, live your life. You know, you escaped. You know, enjoy yourself. You got out of here alive. And he
let him out of his cell.
And he said to me that he really likes guesting on shows. He feels like he gets shot out of a cannon with fewer stakes involved. So if you want to hear Rob talking about Walking Dead, he said he'd be up for maybe a mid-season check-in.
We
get the band back together for maybe like a mid-season feedback show could be fun to get Rob's takes on the first half of season 10. In rapid succession. So slide into his mentions on Twitter at Rob Cesternino if that is something you want to hear him talk to Jess and I about the current state of The Walking Dead later on this season.
Oh my God, Christmas came early, Josh.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Hey, another Bond reference. I like it.
Wasn't even trying.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see where we go with that. Plenty of other things happening in the post-show recaps universe. There is continuing Lost coverage. I have to admit that I was a little triggered seeing Milo play with this toy airplane in this episode of The Walking Dead, as we just talked about a toy airplane on the Lost podcast on Down the Hatch. We've got Mr. Robot coverage as well. So find all of that stuff on post-show recaps or main feed. You can subscribe to the individual feeds as well. Jess, what's going on in your neck of the woods?
Not a whole lot, Josh, although I did finally get to drop my piece about the scariest episode of television I've ever watched, and that can be found over on primetimer.com. You can read about my childhood terror at watching an episode of Webster, which...
<It's> amazing.
it was pretty fun to write, and I cannot believe in 2019... I actually got paid to write an article about Webster. So,
you know,
that's the dream.
In many respects, it feels like we're in the end times, but that is a sign of hope indeed. If nothing else, you're getting to write about Webster in 2019 means we may be able to get out of this yet.
It's true. I mean, maybe it's not the darkest timeline after all.
It's possible.
Yeah. I've got another piece dropping this week on Primetimer about the top 10 characters portrayed by Kate McKinnon on Saturday Night Live,
fun.
Which was a lot of fun to write.
That's
and
fun.
Involved watching a lot of skits and polling various friends and acquaintances, like, what's a funnier character, Shud the Mermaid or Bok Bok? And those are great conversations to have. And I had a lot of fun putting this all together. So hopefully that will be dropping in the next couple of days for your reading enjoyment. And I have a few more things in the hopper, but not for a while. I'm kind of taking it easy, trying to recover from Halloween, and get back into the swing of everything that's happening in our universe.
All right. Well, in our universe, it's Walking Dead all the time. We'll be back next week. Season 10, episode 6, Bonds is coming your way in just 1 week. Until then.
He's quite mad, you know.
Yes, he is. Take care, everybody. Goodbye.